King of the Sindhu and Sauvir estates, Maharaj Rahugana, had great faith in discussions of the absolute truth. Being thus qualified, he heard from Judd Bharat that philosophical presentation, which is approved by all scriptures, on the mystic yogic process, which slackens the knot in the heart. His material conception of himself as a king was thus destroyed. He immediately descended from his palanquin and fell flat on the ground with his head at the lotus feet of Judd Bharat, in such a way that he might be excused for his insulting words against the great Brahmana. He then prayed as follows. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, Evam parampara praptam imam rajasya viduhu sakalinaha mahata yoga nashta parantapa. This supreme science was thus received through the chain of the simple succession, and the saintly kings understood it in that way. But in the course of time, the succession was broken, and therefore the science, as it is, appears to be lost. Through the disciple succession, the royal order was on the same platform as great saintly persons, Raja Rishis. Formerly, they could understand the philosophy of life and knew how to train the citizens to come to the same standard. In other words, they knew how to deliver the citizens from the entanglement of birth and death. When Maharaj Dasarath ruled Ayodhya, the great saint, the great sage Vishvamitra, once came to him to take away Lord Ramchandra and Lakshman to the forest to kill a demon. When the saintly person Vishvamitra came to the court of Maharaj Dasarath, the king, in order to receive the saintly person, asked him, Aihishtam yatta puna janma jayaya. He asked the sage whether everything was going on well in his endeavor to conquer the repetition of birth and death. The whole process of Vedic civilization is based on this point. We must know how to conquer the repetition of birth and death. Maharaj Rahugana also knew the purpose of life. Therefore, when Judd Bharat put the philosophy of life before him, he immediately appreciated it. This is the foundation of Vedic society. Learned scholars, brahmanas, saintly persons, and sages who were fully aware of the Vedic purpose advised the royal order how to benefit the general masses, and by their cooperation, the general masses were benefited. Therefore, everything was successful. Maharaj Rahugana attained this perfection of understanding the value of human life. Maharaj Rahugana attained this perfection of understanding the value of human life. Therefore, he regretted his insulting words to Judd Bharat, and he immediately descended from his palanquin and fell down at the lotus feet of Judd Bharat in order to be excused and to hear from him further about the values of life known as Brahma Jigyas, inquiry into the absolute truth. At the present moment, high government officials are ignorant of the values of life, and when saintly persons endeavor to broadcast the Vedic knowledge, the so-called executives do not offer their respectful obeisances, but try to obstruct the spiritual propaganda. Thus one can say that the formerly kingly government was like heaven, and that the present government is like hell. Om Jnana Timiran Dasya Jnanam Jnana Shalakya Chakshu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. It's a very educational part of the Bhagavatam. I've always relished and made a humble attempt to discuss it in a book. So, you all know the scene. Having come to Bhagavatam class every day and absorbed your minds in what's going on here, the whole situation, the message, you all are taking it deep into your hearts and daily considering this chapter with your intelligence, trying to apply it in your practical life. That is the process of Krishna consciousness. You hear the transcendental sound vibration, and then you apply it in your life. What does it mean to apply it in your life? That means to act with your senses according to what you hear. to mold your activities to the transcendental sound vibration. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna, Maya sakta manaparta yogam yujan marashraya asamshayam shamagrammam itagyasasitashtunu. Arjuna, I am going to explain to you how your mind can become attached to me, how you can know me in full, asamshayam samagram, in full and free from doubt. I'm going to tell all this, all these things to you. You listen to me. That is how knowledge comes, by listening to the right source and then applying your senses based on the instructions that you hear. That is Krishna consciousness. It is not a question of belief. We'll be discussing this later in the weekend. Have any of you read anywhere in Bhagavad Gita? Have you found any verse in the Bhagavatam which says, just believe? No. You find sound vibration, and then you are exhorted to use your senses according to what you hear. You may note in the purport, in the synonyms, there's samyak shradaya, by faith consisting of complete control of the senses and the mind. Faith in Krishna consciousness has a different meaning than the way people currently use faith. They think that faith means you just say, I believe, I accept that, like it's some kind of mental baggage that sits on top of your head. No. Faith in Krishna consciousness means that you are living like that. That's why Krishna says, the fire of transcendental knowledge burns. Real knowledge means that which is applied. Real faith means that you are molding your senses according to the sound vibration. Not that you just say, oh, I believe, yes, that sounds good, I accept that, and leave it at that. No. Faith is evidenced in your actions. Now, Lord Chaitanya gave a very nice definition of faith. Precise, clear. Shraddha shabde vishvas kohe shudida nishchay Krishna bhakti kate sarva kama krita hoy. Your faith is determined to the degree that you understand that simply by serving Krishna, everything else will be taken care of. Sarva kama krita hoy. Everything will go on properly just by your engaging in the devotional service of the Lord. According to how much you are convinced of this, you are classified as first, second, or third class devotee. Our temples, they are a place where we can learn the science of devotional service, how to be engaged in Krishna's service with our senses. The temple offers all kinds of opportunity, encouragement, advice, how to use your senses in Krishna's service. Not that everyone's going to fit into the temple to live there, to learn this, but at least they should be able to come here and see, get impetus, how to use my senses for Krishna's pleasure instead of for ruining myself. Therefore, at our temples, people should find persons living there who demonstrate sensory engagement in devotional service. The more our devotional community can radiate enthusiasm about the super excellence of devotional service, the more you'll see visitors coming and being enlivened. It's not a theoretical acceptance. It is applying our senses and our mind to the message of Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. That makes things very exciting. And that's where the realization comes. That's where the flavor comes. Everyone is mad after flavor. You want to relish. You want to savor. This is what pushes you on. in both material existence and spiritual existence. Material life means you want a taste. And you're willing to work so hard for it. You're willing to work hard just to get a little taste of hackneyed sense pleasure. Even if you say you don't work hard in the employment sense. You work hard by putting up with so many embarrassments and frustrations in this world. That also is work. Why? Because you want to taste. You want to savor. You want to relish the flavor. And what is the flavor we're so hung up about? It's the flavor of material existence, which is a very perverted taste. And we think it's normal. Oh, I'm savoring. I'm relishing. I'm tasting. I'm happy today. But what is the nature of that taste? That we should try to understand before we get so enthusiastic and excited. That taste, Prahlad Maharaj points out, is the same thing the cats and dogs are getting. The same thing. Now you may be very insulted. How can that be? We are educated human beings. We are very considerate human beings. We are trying to be sensitive to others. We're trying to be understanding. We're trying to reveal our hearts to others. Therefore, there's something special about the way human beings and material life taste material existence. No, not at all. The taste of Maya in all species of life is the same. Simply the packaging is different. You know the examples. Whether you drink some water from a stainless steel cup or a gold cup, the taste is still the same. But why does material life seem so variegated, so excitingly variegated? This is the work of Maya on our brains. We are empowered by Maya to see water in the desert. We are empowered by Maya to see opportunity where there is none. To see hope where everything is completely hopeless from the material point of view. We get a false sense of optimism. We see things that aren't there. All because we've taken shelter of the illusory energy. We become empowered to hallucinate. And we accept the hallucinations as factual. And everybody supports us. Yes, there's a taste there. How are you doing today?
I'm doing all right.
Yeah, it's okay. Yes. It's kind of good.
Oh, it's all right.
All right, it's okay. Everybody wants to know, are you tasting material existence? How's your taste? And then sometimes you think, if I only have another person to discuss the taste with and exchange taste, then my life will be fulfilled. It'll all click my whole life when I have somebody else to talk about the taste, swap tastes with. And we think there's something very noble about this. We forget the animals are getting that same exact flavor without so much trouble. Why does there seem to be flavor in material existence? Because Krishna is the source of all flavors. Rasovaisa. Krishna is the fount of all tastes. What is our problem? Our problem is that we are from time to time overwhelmed with urges to taste material existence. So much so that we lose sight of Krishna, the source of all spiritual tastes. When you interact with material existence, what are you actually doing? You are saying, I choose to get my tastes in this way from illusory energy. That's where I want my taste. And then you look for other people to help you in that crusade. You look for other people to help you in your campaign to get to collect the tastes. And sometimes you form alliances with other persons. temporary or lasting a lifetime. You and I, we're going to go for the taste together. You and I are going to discuss the taste that we're getting. Even old people, they do that. It's like flying here from Sydney. There was, the airplane was continuing on to Harare, Zimbabwe, and then to Johannesburg, South Africa. So they had a lot of very old tourists from Zimbabwe and South Africa. And you could see it was their first trip to Australia. And when it came time to check in, when they were changing flights in Sydney to board the flight to Perth, see, it was their first time. They just walked up to the check-in counter and just presented themselves to the airline's clerk. I just wanted you to know I'm here. Airline clerks were very amused, like, you know, because that's not the process, you know. You either have a boarding card or you don't, and you, when it's time to get on the plane, you present your boarding card. You don't just go up and, I just wanted you to know I'm here. So anyway, they were very much absorbed in the taste of finishing their first trip to Australia. They had, you know, the hats on, you know, those, you know, what do you call those hats? Kind of bush hats. I just call them bush hats, you know. Every tourist buys, you know, the brim and the, you know, right, and, you know, and big belt buckles and, you know. So many things, products made of Australian leather. So, and they would spend most of their time just chatting with one another, even though they're like 70, 75 years old. They're so withered, about to die, but still they're exchanging, having exchanges with one another. Is this the kind of life we want? We don't know what is real. Yet, as long as we can just chat away with someone, we feel satisfied. Is this the kind of life we want? Are we willing to embarrass our spiritual identity in this way? We feel so hungry for flavor that we don't care where the flavor comes from, and we ruin our spiritual knowledge, we ruin our spiritual life to pursue the dead flavors of material existence. And when you do that, it means that you actually have no understanding that Krishna is the source of real flavor. We especially do this when our sadhana becomes weak. We think that this temple is just a burden, and all the activities that go on here are, they're just a, well, almost a pain in the neck. Things you have to do to get purified. We have this big enjoying propensity in us. We want to enjoy, but what does it mean to enjoy? Think about it. It means you want flavor, you want taste, you want rasa. But this material world offers perverted rasa. Now, who here would like to be called a pervert? I'm not a pervert. But have we ever thought that as soon as we try to enjoy material existence, we are perverts? That's why Prabhupada uses the phrase, the perverted rasa, perverted taste. The real thing does exist, but we're going for the perversion because we're perverts. We think that by interacting with matter, we will get such a good flavor. So much so that we're willing to push Krishna aside and push aside all the original spiritual flavors of material existence just so we can enjoy the perverted tastes of material existence. So that's what it means when we have this enjoying propensity flare up in us. It means, I want to be a pervert, I want the perverted tastes. That's all. What does it mean when you say you want to enjoy, or you're not getting enough enjoyment? It means you're not getting enough flavor, enough, you're not savoring And you hope that the perverted material existence is going to give you that flavor you're missing. This is what it means. When we become affected by the enjoying attitude. I'm missing something. I really need something. What is it I need? I need some perverted mellows. I need some perverted rasa. Our whole process of Krishna consciousness is designed to cleanse that polluted desire. To give us a taste of the original rasa, the original flavors. Those original flavors come to us through the processes of devotional service. But when we start to weaken in our spiritual existence, we begin to think that the processes of devotional service are an inconvenience, an imposition, something you can take or leave as you like. Everything starts to become a pain in the neck. Association with devotees becomes a pain in the neck. Temple president becomes a pain in the neck. If you're a householder, the wife you have or the husband you have right now, they're a pain in the neck. You start to think, let me mold my situation according to what I think is best. Why? Because you hope to get flavors from material existence. And you're tired of putting up with Krishna. You know, the processes of devotional service and our bhakti yoga activities are very mysterious. They are actually a great mystery. They are mystic yoga. In what sense? In the sense that things aren't what they seem. It looks like, how can you cleanse the mundane rasas and get a taste of the original rasas just by doing the little things we do around here? Singing songs, dancing, walking around plants, cooking, cleaning. All these things that go on in everybody's house, any building, and we are supposed to be achieving the height of spiritual existence by doing these things. So when we lose appreciation of the authorized process of bhakti yoga, then easily our hankering for the mundane mellows develops. We remember we get hit by nightmares. The nightmare of material existence starts to look very nice to us. It looks like a beautiful dream. Therefore, we need help that we, in spite of how things look, we go on with our dedication to the processes of devotional service. Things aren't what they appear. Even the holy name. I'm sure you've all noticed. Sometimes you just lose remembrance. You forget that all nectar is in the holy name. And your mind becomes filled with visions of perverted rasa, the material world offering you tastes. Well, generally, we don't think the whole material world offers us a taste. We think a certain situation will offer a taste. Not the whole world, but just a little aspect of it. That's all I need. Just a little. I don't want the whole world, just a, so to speak, just one little home under the gum trees where some of the necessities of life can go on. So, then sometimes we decide to chant Hare Krishna with attention. And we're amazed. Wow, this is actually good. There's actually something there. It's amazing, this mantra. Well, that's all I really need. But then if our association is not strong, and our service appetite's not strong, once again we become overwhelmed by our ambitions to taste mundane rasa. What you're seeing, in other words, is a battle between the mundane rasas and the original spiritual rasas. Who are we, which ones are we going to absorb ourselves in? The temple is offering you an opportunity to be trained how to always go for the original taste. Whether you live in the temple or not, it's a place that solidifies you in your career to revive your original Krishna consciousness, which means revive your original taste. And in the temple, you should get association from those who are considered to be more advanced. That is a principle in Nectar of Devotion, we may forget. A devotee always tries to associate with those considered more advanced. In that way, your memory of the original tastes becomes revived. Just like if you want to be a sense gratifier, you hear from other sense gratifiers, and your ignorance becomes increased. Oh, yes, that's how to enjoy. Sure, yes, yes, now I understand. I remember a funny story. When I was younger, my mother was strict Christian according to the modern standard. And so she always raised us that certain things were sinful, very sinful. Not meeting, of course, but generally, she had three boys, so she felt it was her duty to always preach to her sons about the dangers of illicit sex life. So we were growing up in the city, so everybody in the neighborhood was completely absorbed in that. So it's like you were freaks if you weren't always discussing those things. Actually, at that time, not everybody was actually doing those things, but they talked about it all the time. So, we were just 11, 12 years old. So all the cool guys in the neighborhood, they would just talk about it all the time. Their so-called pastimes. And so I remember, this is how it starts, by hearing from characters like that. My middle brother, I remember he was sitting on the steps of the house, and one of the cool guys in the neighborhood was telling, it's really, this is where it's at. I did this the other day, and I was with that one, and this happened, and that happened. And So at that time, I was still a good boy, so I immediately said, I'm going home. Mother said we shouldn't listen to this kind of thing, and Jesus said it's sinful. So I announced I was leaving. My middle brother, however, he got really carried away, talking to the cool guy in the neighborhood. My middle brother said, yeah, I know what you mean. I do this stuff all the time. I knew that he wasn't, he had not done those kind of things, but, he had become overwhelmed by hearing, and he became inspired, so he was, yeah. He was telling the guy, the cool guy, yeah, I had my girls. So, of course, I immediately went home to tell Mother, Larry, he's telling those guys out there that he does such and such. Don't worry, Mother. I immediately stood up and told the guy that this is, Jesus said it's sinful, and I left. But Larry, he was actually telling them it. He thinks it's good. He does it too. That was my mother. She really got fired up and bring that boy here. So I very eagerly went and got him. Very happily watched as my mother just screamed and yelled at him. Anyway, that wasn't the immediate, or that wasn't the real effect of the situation, this conversation with this guy. Years later, I could see the real danger is not so much that my brother said, yeah, I'm doing it too. The real danger for both of us is in hearing that sound vibration. It fills your mind with visions of something that doesn't exist. There's no satisfaction, there's no taste. But when you hear that kind of thing, your mind fills up with all sorts of delusions. And then you begin to actually become inspired. Yes, it's there. The taste is there. Other people are getting it. And this private hallucination just festers in you. It wells up. So much so that you think, I know material enjoyment exists. I know the taste is there. I can just reach out and touch it. It's there. It'll be for me. And this way, we become victims of material existence, as Prabhupada says. Prabhupada, he has such extraordinary phrases he uses in his books. You think about them. Maybe you've read them so many times and you forget them.